Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, before we get started, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So, whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Again, that is bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find more, but that is bwhustle.com/join.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast, and I am now joined by David Woods, who covers Butler and the Butler Bulldogs. A great dog, in my opinion. One of the better dogs in college sports, in my opinion. Butler Blue. But David, good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. As you may know, Blue has designated himself Mayor of March because the entire NCAA basketball tournament is coming to his home city. So Blue is going to be a presence around the tournament in Indianapolis this month.
How many Blues have you been around? Do you know?
Well, I think 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
I think I've been around. Well, I've covered the program since 2001, so I guess I've been around for all the Blues. Blue 2 was I think the prototype, though, for everything. He somehow he seemed to that dog seemed to realize that that it was his world and everyone else was just living in it.
That's amazing. Because they're all different personalities, and I'm sure they're all different in how they are with other people and campus and everything like that.
They are a little bit, actually. Yeah,
that's really cool. So Butler, it's been a tough season. I want to figure out kind of what's happened with Butler this year, why it's kind of been a down year for Coach Jordan's team. They're ninth in the Big East as of this recording. What would you pinpoint as the biggest reason as to why Butler struggled this year?
Well, I think the biggest reason is their talent lacks experience, and their experience lacks talent. I think that's kind of the best way to sum it up. You know, they've got some good young players. Their experienced guys aren't like overwhelmingly gifted by Big East standards. But then having said that, I mean, Butler really dismantled Villanova Sunday. And, you know, Butler rose as high as fifth in the polls last season, which probably most people don't even remember, because they had some injury issues and then had a kind of a mid-season swoon, but really were playing a lot better at the end. And I actually think with Kamar Baldwin as a closer, I think Butler would have made the Sweet 16. But they didn't get that chance. But I bring that up only to say, as good as that team was, Butler, that team rarely played as well as Butler did Sunday against Villanova when they were efficient both offensively and defensively. And maybe that was a bad game for Villanova. I think it kind of was. But, you know, you have to credit Butler for part of that.
So do you think it's just like a one-year swoon this year with what this roster just had versus last year? Or do you think this is something that Butler fans should be a little bit nervous about?
Well, I'm probably a little bit less optimistic about next season than I had because, I mean, for so much of the time, it's like, well, this team you're seeing now is the same team that's going to be back. Now, is that good for Butler or is that bad? And I wrote a story recently. It's with the not knowing who's going to come back. It is so crazy, Chase, that Butler could have 17 players on scholarship next year, and they could have as few as 10. I mean, that is really a strange one. But I guess the seniors who come back don't count against your scholarship total. And none of them has really said who's coming back. I mean, Aaron Thompson might want to come back because he's kind of been banged up and probably maybe unable to fulfill his goals the last two seasons. You know, would Bryce Enzi come back? You know, or Jair Bolden? I mean, they're both fifth-year guys. You know, you want to hang around in college for a sixth year. But Butler's freshman class is talented, although, you know, they lost Scooby Johnson and Jacoby Coles both to injury. But the two freshman guards, I mean, I can't imagine a Power 6 team as two freshman guards as good as those two. But, you know, most Power 6 teams don't have to be starting two freshman guards as Butler does. So and Bo Hodges, I think, I thought he might break out when he entered the season late here. He finally got his eligibility. I think having to do with credit transfer or something like that. But, you know, he's been out a little bit. So I think Butler's roster does look good for next season and seasons beyond, but it's still a little bit hard to know because you don't know who's coming back, not only for Butler, but for other teams.
Absolutely. It's just going to be weird. And it's even weirder for college football and just how that works with scholarships and who gets to play and who goes in the portal and who stays. It's a mess. It's going to take some time to get over. You mentioned the Villanova game on Sunday. What went right for Butler, and why were they able to beat a really good Villanova team?
Well, for some reason, they have really clamped down in 3-point defense. I mean, Villanova is 2 for 27, and I mean that's got to be fluky. I mean, you could play pretty good defense, and I think Villanova missed probably a lot of shots that they normally make. But on the other hand, over the last four games, collectively, Butler has limited opponents to 16% shooting from the arc. Well, that is absolutely a winning number when you're holding opponents down. Now, Butler gave up some things at the rim, but against Villanova, I think that's a good trade-off. you know, make them make the occasional two and almost eliminate the three. I mean, you can beat Villanova doing that, and Butler did.
Yeah, and it was a much-needed win based on what this season has been for them. Covering LaVal Jordan, what makes him different than previous Butler coaches that you've covered?
That's a good question. Maybe he takes a more so-called holistic approach than the other coaches did. Although I think the other coaches did too, and I think that's maybe one of the most. I'm not even sure I've written about it enough because it's just so you kind of take it for granted, you know. But Butler, I think, has had six coaches in the 2000s, but Butler plays the same way it does in 2021 as it did in 2001. Which was my first year on the beat, and which was LaVal's last season as a Butler player. And I just think that's amazing. You know, usually when coaches change, you know, styles of play change, the culture changes, lots of things change. But Butler's style of play and culture has been largely the same for two decades. You know, the talent hasn't always been the same, but kind of the way they go about things has been. And I cannot really think of another high profile college program that you can say that about.
Interesting. Do you enjoy covering Coach Jordan more than previous coaches, or was Brad, like, if you had to rank them based in terms of quotes and just personality and who you enjoy talking with the most, where does he rank?
Yeah, I don't know how to. I'm not sure quite how to answer. I even though I just covered him two seasons, for sure, I had a really good relationship with Chris Holtmann. Mm-hmm. Some Butler fans don't like him because he left for Ohio State, but on the other hand, I think Chris Holtmann kept Butler's program afloat mm-hmm. at a time when it was very vulnerable. I had a very good relationship with Brad Stevens, although I tell you, I didn't get a lot of breaks from him in terms of, like, him, you know, telling me stuff or this or that off the record. I got none of it.
Mm-hmm.
LaVal, I think, is very good to cover in that. He's kind of even handed. I don't think he takes, takes things personally. The fact that he was an assistant coach at the Big Ten at Iowa and Michigan has probably influenced him. I had a good relationship with Todd Licklider too. The one year Brandon Miller was there, I did not cover the team that year. So I had an okay relationship when he was a player, and I had a good relationship with that Mata also. So I really have no complaints in that department.
Butler is 1-8 on the road this season. Is there any reason? Is it just an outlier? Is it just a coincidence that they're 1-8 on the road, or is there something that you've noticed the way they played on the road that has just been a big detriment to them winning games on the road?
Well, it sounds like a cliche, but a lot of times, they just haven't been tough enough on the road, or if they were tough enough, they didn't have all the pieces. Butler played Villanova coming off a COVID pause and played decently for like a long time in that game, but lost by a lot. So that, that wasn't too surprising. And then Butler played, I thought, really well at Seton Hall and fell behind by 13 and caught it down by like two. So it's not like they completely collapsed on the road, but they have had some games where they have collapsed. And it's unfortunate that Butler closed the season at Creighton, because I've been to Omaha to cover Butler several times, and a combination of Creighton playing well and the Bulldogs losing their minds when they crossed the Nebraska state line or something, but they have just been awful in the games in Omaha. So I'll kind of be intrigued to see if Butler can make that competitive, because that was a momentous upset when Butler played Creighton earlier this season. And as a couple of oddities about Butler's season, as poor a season it's been, Butler's Hinkle Fieldhouse record in the Big East is its best in its 8 years in the league. Butler was 7-3 in Big East home games, and oddly had never been better than 6-3 all this time. So that was their best. That's their best home record ever in the Big East. And there's only three teams in the league that have won 10 conference games, and that's Villanova, Creighton, and Seton Hall, and Butler beat all of them.
Yeah. Weird season for Butler. Who would you say has been the most important piece for Butler staying afloat this year, and who do you think you've been kind of like, man, I would have thought that this player would have been better, would have been more important to the team this year?
I think the most important piece, surprisingly, because you'd think Aaron Thompson, but the way it's gone, I think the most important piece has been Bryce Enzi. Mm. He's just been good game after game. As a rebounder, leader, defender, passer, scorer, I mean, he's done a lot of good things. I thought Bryce Golden would have played better this season, but lately he has played better. I guess I thought the way he's playing now is the way I thought he'd play all season, but I think he was dinged up earlier. And, you know, there's so many weird things about this season. I would really caution athletic administrators and fans from overreacting to anything this year. And that goes for, you know, Duke and Kentucky and Carolina and Kansas and Butler and any program. I just don't know that it makes sense to overreact to things that have happened this year.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Is there any chance Butler goes on a run, wins the Big East tournament, and makes the NCAA tournament? Or do you think this is just a lost year?
I think it's a lost year. Odds makers make Butler 150-1. But I think in that quarterfinal game on, which would be a Thursday, you know, either like the 1-8 or the 2-7 game, you know, I can't really say Butler couldn't win that. Now, if they got to the semifinals, would they be able to win two more? I mean, I don't think Butler's won four straight games all season. So I think it'd be the longest of long shots. But frankly, I don't know how good the Big East is really. So, you know, there may be half a dozen teams that could win the Big East tournament. And right now, I think you'd have to put Butler among those half dozen. Now, they certainly haven't played all that well away from Hinkle. But, it would really be, I guess, sort of fantasy land to think that they could win four straight in New York. But, you know, their depth is decent. And, you know, if they win the quarterfinal game, you know, is the huge, well, of course, you have to win the first one. But if they would be pitted against Creighton and Villanova, could they beat one of those two teams again? I don't think so, but neither can I rule it out.
Absolutely. Well, what can we check out from you at the Indianapolis Star this week?
The wait is finally over. Knotfest Roadshow is back. October 13th, Jiffy Lube Live. Featuring Slipknot. With Killswitch Engage, Fever 333, and Code Orange. Tickets on sale now at LiveNation.com. Part of the Mattress Warehouse Concert Series.
Well, I'm working on several things really for next week, kind of pertaining to Indianapolis and the hosting of the NCAA tournament. But I'm planning a longish feature on freshman guard Chuck Harris, who is really doing some historic things for both. I think he's going to be the first freshman to lead the team in scoring in 41 years, and I think that's a notable achievement.
All right. Well, go check that out. Keep up the great work, David. I greatly appreciate it. And we'll have to talk again soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always up for talking about Butler basketball, and next year it'll probably be more fun than this year, because I really feel distanced from this team during the pandemic, because all the interaction is by phone or Zoom. So it's a little weird that way.
It is. But hopefully we get back, because that does concern me as like coaches, and especially in pro sports, of just getting kind of normalized the distance between reporters and the team. And I wonder if that becomes a problem.
Yeah, in college, I think it's a huge problem, because a lot of really great stories go untold. But But college coaches, unfortunately, are massive control freaks, and, yep. and they don't really care about what reporters do.
Absolutely. All right, David. Well, I greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time. Stay safe out there, and yeah, we will talk again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Chase. Thanks for having me on.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas Podcast. I am now joined by Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Great, Chase. How are you doing, man?
I am pretty good. We have to talk about a team that you spend hours in deep into the night covering and watching and thinking about, the Michigan State Spartans. I want to start here. Michigan State has always been a tough offensive watch for me. Like, that is something that I've just come accustomed to, is watching Michigan State basketball, is I'm not going to enjoy the offense in this game. They're 86th in KenPom this year in offensive efficiency. What has been the main problem on that end of the floor for the Spartans this year?
Well, I think the biggest problem is not having a point guard. And when you go from Cassius Winston, that's a tough situation as it is, because I mean, if you watch the offense maybe the last previous year and a half, you know, in the 2019-20 season, and then that final four run, particularly from January on in that final four run in 2019, they became a much more efficient offense in terms of moving the ball with Winston and Tillman and playing off their court vision and strengths. And to lose Winston at the point, but also to lose Tillman and the things that he did in terms of setting screens, passing, they had their two-man game, but they also set up the guys around them really well, especially with a guy like Aaron Henry as the complimentary guy that could do so many things well. Without them, they've struggled. And, you know, Tom Izzo, he started the season with Foster Lawyer there. Lawyer is just physically not built for the Big Ten, and not for 20 minutes a game in the Big Ten. So that was one challenge. And they tried to move Rocket Watts there, which had been kind of the plan all off season. But he didn't have really, with the COVID situation over the last summer, didn't have time to fully adjust with his team to kind of learn nuances of running an offense and being more of a ball mover rather than, a feature two guard. So I think that's kind of gummed up the gears quite a bit. AJ Hogard was a little bit behind in his development. He had a little knee issue in the preseason, and that slowed his development a little bit. So they've just struggled to find consistent ball movement around the perimeter. I do think, though, in the last month, I asked Tom Izzo about this in December, the potential for moving Josh Langford to playing more one, because they had experimented with it a few years ago out of necessity in a game at Louisville. And it turned out that's really helped the offense, having the ball in his hands and Aaron Henry's hands a little bit more. Michigan State right now is at its best with those two guys kind of running the show and playing more or less positionless basketball. But you're right, it is a tough watch, especially when you get Watts in a game. The ball just seems to slow up and doesn't have the same flow in the half court that you saw with Winston and Tillman.
They're ninth in the Big Ten this year. Seems bad. Just doing some advanced analytics numbers searching. Ninth is not where you want to be, I think, for Tom Izzo. I think he's probably not the happiest about that. You outlined the point guard situation here. Is there a bigger problem at play? And do you think Michigan State might have, with Michigan just becoming the powerhouse that it is, that Illinois just beating down Michigan last night and where they are with Underwood, do you think about where Michigan State's going and just the newfound competition that they have at the top of the Big Ten, and that Izzo and company should be concerned about it?
Yes and no. I do think when you look at what they've got coming in next year, I mean, the focus is on the perimeter. And Max, I think that trio of Jaden Akins, Max Christie, and Pierre Brooks are going to be a really dynamic backcourt, and give them some depth starting next year. You know, you lose Langford, and more than likely you're going to lose Henry to the pros. So I think those three guys come in. At least I think Akins will probably jump right to the head of the line and become the starter at point guard. Might take him a little bit. It did take Cassius Winston basically a year and a half to kind of assume that starting point guard role when he was a freshman and sophomore. And Izzo puts so much demand on that point guard position. I don't think I'm too concerned about that, particularly when you think and everything moves in such dramatic fashion. It especially with COVID right now, it seems like 100 years ago, right? But this is still a team that a year ago at this point, everyone was looking at and saying this was going to be a potential national championship team. So it's a regenerative year, I think, for them, and particularly on top of those three guards they bring in, if they somehow manage to get Imani Bates to reclassify and play a year in college, that's a whole other story. So I don't think I'd be too concerned, but I do think Juwan Howard's done a fantastic job, you know, with recruiting and with coaching. I think having Phil Martelli there has really helped them kind of develop. It helped Juwan develop into a better college coach. I think he's kind of a sponge with what Martelli's done. And I do think that, you know, you think of a lot of the better guys in the Big Ten that are going to probably be going. I mean, Iowa will probably go. I don't see anything more for Coburn. Garza's gone next year. So I do think there will be the competition this year in the Big Ten has been insane. And I think all from everyone down, I mean, you know, Rutgers has so many good guys with Harper, and Baker is going to be gone now, you know, after this year, more than likely. You know, I mean, it's hard to tell with the freebie year for some of these seniors if they do come back. But I think Michigan State's in a good position. I do think that, you know, Tom Izzo talked about this last night in previewing a little bit of the Michigan game. You know, when John Beilein came in, it became a rivalry. I mean, there were stretches at the beginning of Izzo's career where they were getting beaten like a drum with Steve Fisher's team. And then Izzo kind of seized that mantle and really in the late 90s, early 2000s, built his program to what it is now. He's had some dip years kind of like this over time where, you know, you wonder, are they going to make the NCAA tournament? And they always seem to rebound and then push to another Final Four level a year or two later. So I'm not too concerned about the long-term effects of this, especially knowing what's on the horizon recruiting-wise. But for this year, there's no question that Michigan is the beast in the Big Ten. And, you know, it's, you know, where Michigan State's at in terms of trying to get to an NCAA bid. You know, you beat Michigan once in these last two games, I think you've put yourself in. I mean, I think you're pretty close to being in right now as it is.
I don't know if you saw, he put up his newest I don't even know what to call this grouping for the Big Dance on ESPN.com, and he has the Spartans on one of the last four in and has them on the right side of the bubble as it stands right now.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of basketball between now and the end of next week when the tournaments are all done and they reveal the field. So, you know, there's still going to be a lot of jockeying, I think. And there's the other caveat that no one really knows exactly what this year's committee is going to be looking at and how they're going to be examining teams that like Michigan State during the middle of the season had COVID issues. They're going to have to try and examine the limited non-conference schedules and some of the teams. I mean, you know, what Michigan State did in the first six games of the season and getting up to number four in the country, I mean, it's no small feat. They just demolished Notre Dame, and then they go on the road and win at Duke and look every bit as efficient in those early games as they did at the end of last year at times. But I think we also quickly found out that Notre Dame and Duke aren't quite at the same level as they had been in previous years. So, you know, that certainly hurts their card. It's going to be an interesting selection process. And the one thing that I think that also has to be kept in mind with this selection committee, and I don't know how it'll end up being, but I do think that, and they might not say it, but eyeballs are important. Eyeballs are going to be important after not having a tournament last year. And I would think that any and every way you can get the best brands in the tournament, if they're on the bubble, I think they're going to try and get them in.
Interesting. How would you rate Tom Izzo's job performance this season?
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think back, you know, this actually, to me, started about 5 years ago when they had that great team with Denzel Valentine and Bryn Forbes, and they came out looking like a potential one seed, and they got bumped down to a two seed and losing in the worst, probably the biggest NCAA upset to Middle Tennessee State in the first round. That might have been one of Izzo's best teams, and they just went into a buzzsaw shooting night from an opponent, and they struggled against the arc there. But I think he's, from that point, he's had to constantly reinvent himself and really adapt to the modern game and get away from the sets and get more in terms of flow on the offensive side. You know, you saw it a little bit of the adaptations with Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson back in, I think, 2017 or 2018 when they were there. And then in 2019 when they made that Final Four run, Josh Langford gets hurt, and Nick Ward gets hurt in the middle of that season, and all of a sudden he's got to play Cassius Winston 35, 40 minutes a game. And that's run countercurrent to Izzo's history, right? Well, since then, 2019, 2018, 2019, you're seeing him do that more. I mean, you're seeing that stretch right now with, in the middle of the season, moving Langford to point guard and getting Henry at the ball and going without a traditional point guard. You're seeing him adapt his bigs and not sticking with one guy and just rotating to try and get the maximum amount out of each of those guys in situational settings. You know, and you can't discount all the other things that have gone on with COVID. And I mean, he also had it this season, and, you know, his assistant coach Dwayne Stevens lost his father in April, to COVID. You know, he's had, I think, 13 of the 15 players on the rosters have had COVID. And I think six or seven of them during the season, you know, that shut them down for 20 days. So, To get to that point where they were, after losing at Purdue, I mean, I don't think anybody around here thought this team had it in them with the schedule ahead. And what do? They change the lineup mid-game after falling behind by 13 at Indiana and come back and win there. They upset Illinois. They upset Ohio State. And then they beat Indiana again the other night. So, it is an interesting and fascinating thing to watch a Hall of Fame coach have to constantly adjust and adapt. And I don't think that'll ever get the kind of play and buzz, because so many people will just look at end results and say, oh, well, you know, like a guy like Matt Painter or Juwan Howard, you know, they're pushing towards 20 wins this season. You're like, they could be coach of the year, but with what Izzo had and where they're at now in the last 2.5 weeks to get back onto that bubble and maybe into the tournament is an amazing, to me, coaching job that, you know, the best coaches will change and adapt to their needs in the moment. And sometimes it takes Izzo kicking and screaming to do it. I'm still waiting for him to play some zone defense, which I don't think will ever happen, but who knows? If you want to throw a curveball at someone, work on a quick zone and throw them completely out of sorts, right? You know, but I think that he's done a pretty good job this year. You know, maybe not as good as that Final Four year in 2019, but, you know, he also doesn't have a Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman there right now. He's got an Aaron Henry, and he's riding Aaron Henry into the ground right now, and Aaron Henry's producing.
What happened in the IU game? You did a deep dive. What went right? And do you think this is, did you find anything that's sustainable as they look to Michigan?
You know, I think the biggest thing to take out of that game is what they did defensively on Trayce Jackson-Davis. I mean, they gave up 34 to him in the first game at Bloomington. And they were digging in the post a lot more. On this one, I thought Marcus Bingham used his length to effectiveness and made Jackson Davis alter his shot and his angles that he was trying to take. I mean, it, like, there was one point, I think Bingham had blocked his shot twice, and then Jackson Davis went into the post and went up against him again and just cocked his arm about 45 degrees to the left just to try and get around it and basically just smacked it off the backboard. You know, I think that was partly one of the things that, you know, you've seen them, they've done fairly well against those bigs, you know, with Jackson Davis in this game. I think they had a decent game against Garza, decent game against Coburn, even though he was kind of a bull in a china shop at times. They rotated, and used almost every foul available to their bigs, and that's, you know, that's a heck of a strategy there. I mean, if you just, you take them out of the offensive equation and just say you need to stop these guys and get four different guys giving them different looks, I think, you know, that's one of the things to me that I think was very noticeable in the Indiana game is the job that they did. I thought Gabe Brown and Josh Langford and Henry were making it difficult when Jackson Davis would catch it in the paint by doubling and running at him at different angles. I think that from an offensive standpoint, it was ugly. I mean, it was ugly on both sides early in the game, but I think it was, I think the last 11 minutes Izzo went to Langford running the point. Rocket Watson and A.J. Hoger didn't play down the stretch at all. And he went with that, You can call it sometimes a smaller line. It's probably a little bigger when you go with a 6'5 point guard in Langford. And he wasn't trying to necessarily be that passing guard. He was trying to be a fluidity guard and getting the team in and out of sets and moving the ball around the perimeter. You saw them making extra passes. I think that helped. I think the other thing that helped was Aaron Henry got out and in the final maybe 14 minutes of that game and started getting that team running because they were so sluggish in the first maybe, you know, 30 minutes, 35 minutes of that game. And I think that to me, those three things were the reason that they were able to come back against Indiana, because I thought Indiana played really hard. Neither team made many shots early, and they were turning the ball over, and there were so many fouls. But once Michigan State got out and ran and transitioned a little bit and with the job they were doing defensively, I think those are the three keys that really kind of got them over the hump in that game. Oh, yeah, and that whole 12 points in a row by Aaron Henry, too, down the stretch. I mean, that doesn't hurt when you have a guy that makes a change. And I think we talk about time as a coaching job. The ability to get Aaron Henry, who's been a team-first kind of facilitator, you know, a guy who would take that two-step jump into the paint and look to kick out or create for someone else, now he's looking for his. And that's changed them dramatically, because Aaron Henry is in the last seven or eight games has developed into the go-to guy that everyone thought that he could become. I mean, you know, that he thought that he needed to become, you know, after pulling his name out of the draft last year. I think that he's done a good job of really playing out of character and developing into that kind of go-to guy. I don't know if there's down the stretch, you know, especially with Io out after Sissoko broke his nose. I don't know if any guard in the Big Ten has been playing at the kind of level that Aaron Henry's been playing at, with so many things that he does well in terms of now scoring so much, but also still facilitating guys and even more so attacking the glass. You know, he's done a tremendous job of elevating his game when Michigan State needed it most.
So it sounds like Henry has been the unsung hero for Michigan State this year. Is there one player in particular that you think has kind of underperformed and you did not see this kind of coming before the season?
Boy, there's two guys. And I think everyone kind of anointed Rocket Watts and Joey Hauser as being plug-and-play guys with Winston and Tillman gone. And Watts, that transition to point guard, has been a mess in a lot of different ways. I think that the offense looks lost. He looks lost in running it at times. There are moments where you see him being kind of that lead one guard, maybe like a Keith Appling or Kalen Lucas in Michigan State's past, who looks to score, but then, you know, also will go north and south and create for guys outside. But there's more times than not where he has trouble getting in and out of sets. There's more times than not where he's in the middle of a play just floating on the wing and just calling for the ball rather than moving and making things happen. That's, I think, been probably the biggest disappointment. And Hauser, mm-hmm. I think, has Hauser, you know, everybody kind of thought, you know, this guy could come in. And Izzo, to his detriment, really, in this, it sold him as a guy that maybe is his best passer, passing big man that he's ever had. I mean, all these things that, these platitudes that he gave before the season, we haven't seen. Hauser's been a defensive liability. Guys have been, I mean, so has Watts. I mean, you know, you put the two of those guys in the court and you're seeing blow by layups. But Hauser gets blown around a lot. I think from an offensive standpoint, he's been mercurial. I think that, you know, the late surge, I think, kind of coincides with his ability to get some buckets. You know, that's helped them get some complimentary scoring, but we're not seeing the guy who put up 27 on Wisconsin on a nightly basis. And, you know, he has the talent. I think there's no question he has the talent, but, you know, sometimes you see when a guy gets lost on the defensive end, it affects his offense. And both two of those guys, I think that's been their biggest struggle, is the struggles that they have on defense are carrying over to their offense. And if they want to make a run at the Big Ten tournament and really solidify an NCAA berth, and then whatever happens after that, those two guys need to take that next step to being the guys that they were at Duke and against Notre Dame. Because, I mean, 39 minutes a game from Aaron Henry and 36 minutes a game from Josh Langford on bad feet and legs can only go so far. This stretch, they've played 11 games in the last 5 days, and this will, you know, playing Michigan on Thursday will be their second, basically, NCAA tournament weekend prep, you know, where they go game, off day, game. You know, those two guys in particular are going to need to really step up if they want to have a chance against Michigan here and solidify that tournament bid.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here, Chris. What do you think is coming in the Michigan game? Do you think it's not good that Michigan just got blown out by Illinois before this game, or what do you think, and what are you looking for in Michigan State this week?
Boy, it's a really hard one to pick, because I think Michigan State, what we saw in that Indiana game was kind of the animal backed in the corner. You know, they knew that was a game they couldn't lose. And, you know, from a mental and physical standpoint, with the basketball that they've played, both the amount of minutes that those guys have played and also the high level of competition the last 2 weeks, coupled on top of that with the must-need win, you know, that physically and mentally can take a lot out of a team. So I don't know what to expect from Michigan State. That said, you know, Michigan right now, you know, they could win this game in a close one. They could win this game in an absolute blowout. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of Michigan fans, and I think a lot of Michigan State fans, point back to the, it was 119-57 or whatever it was in 2000 season that Izzo's team beat Michigan. And, you know, that was the senior night for Mateen Cleaves and Morris Peterson, and, you know, it's still revered as one of the best moments on the Michigan State side of that rivalry and the worst side of the Michigan rivalry. I don't think those are forgotten, so I don't think – I don't see – if they have a chance to do that, I wouldn't be shocked to see Michigan do that. That said, you know, Izzo usually gets his teams mentally up for these rivalry games. There have been some big losses against Beeline, and there's been some recovery games where they win big and win close. So that old cliche of throwing everything out when it comes to the rivalry, I think comes into play here. I hate to rely on that cliche, but you know, if Michigan State can do what they did to Jackson Davis and limit Hunter Dickinson like they did against at times at Iowa, I think, with Garza, you know, they're gonna have their hands full, and I think that Michigan's gonna win this game, and, you know, maybe, you know, close to double digits, or, you know, right around there. Michigan State needs a break, And, you know, the second game, I think, of the weekend, will, to me, would be the one where how Tom Izzo adjusts things will be kind of the interesting one. But, you know, the Thursday game, I think, you know, that's going to be – but, hey, you know what? Where's Michigan's head at right now too, right? I mean, you know, they lost to an Illinois team that didn't have Dosunmu, and they lost handily. So – And you know, that's going to be fascinating to watch. You know, I'm sure Mo Wagner's getting in his brother's ear a little bit to kind of tell him what it's like to beat Michigan State and throw up the dollar signs to the fans, even though there might not be any in the stands. But, you know, this game means a lot to these programs. And, you know, Izzo and Beilein really made this into one of the best college basketball rivalries that, you know, outside of maybe Duke and North Carolina and UCLA and Arizona, and, you know, this is one of the ones that people talk about. And it's going to be two fascinating watches to see what happens.
All right. Chris, what can we check out from you this week at the Detroit Free Press?
A lot of Michigan and Michigan State coverage. You know, that's going to be kind of the crux of the week here. We've got a lot of coverage coming previewing Thursday's game, and then we'll have stuff coming on Sunday to preview the regular season finale and senior day at Michigan State. And I'll probably be writing off Joshua Langford and what's probably going to be his final game as a Michigan State player after some pretty hard times over his life and his college career. So those are the kind of things to keep a watch for at freep.com.
All right. Keep up the great work, Chris. Thank you so much for making the time today. I greatly appreciate it.
You got it, Chase. Take care, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Having your own home is awesome, but it's also a lot of work. The good news? Finding help for your projects is easier than ever. Introducing Angie, the app that puts all your home care needs at your fingertips. Need a pro to fix that emergency leak? Maybe find someone to build a deck or even set your seasonal tasks on autopilot. Angie can handle all that and more. Expert pros, hundreds of home projects, clear pricing, and the easiest way to book and pay in seconds. This is Angie, your home for everything home. Download the app today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.